Magyanati Madanasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Dina Tasmai Shri Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvare Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Go Premanande Haribo. A public service announcement. There's no parking on the against that other building. Only parking around our building. So if you parked your car on that side, just move it. Sorry for any inconvenience. Thank you. I'm not using it anymore. Except for kirtans. Because it's putting a permanent crimp in my head. I'm wearing it for too many hours, so I decided to move to this. Okay, so last week we were, by the request of Brajakishori, 2 weeks ago, we started on mantra number 6. And we got a couple of paragraphs into Mantra 6 that is in the Sri Upanishad for those of you who are listening at home. And Mantra 6 in Sri Upanishad starts on page 43. And the verse is, I'll say, please repeat, Yastu Sarvani Bhutani
Yastu Sarvani Bhutani
Atmani Vanupashyati Sarva Bhuteshu Chatmanam Tatona Vijugupsate Ya Hihu Tu But Sarvani All Bhutani Living Entities Atmani
In
relation to the Supreme Lord
Eva
Only Anupashyati
Observes in a systematic way,
Sarva Bhuteshu,
in every living being,
Cha,
and
Atmanam,
the Super Soul,
Tataha,
thereafter,
Na,
not,
Vijagupsate,
hates anyone.
So Anupashyati
means observes in a systematic way.
And
when we talked last week,
we looked up the word
systematic.
And
what phrase
did we
pull out
that was very
instructive?
Purposeful
regularity.
Purposeful
regularity.
Doing something
with
a very specific
idea in
mind of
what our goal is.
And
can you
look up purpose?
And
so,
purposeful regularity.
And this verse is saying that
there's a
systematic way
that we should see Krishna within everything and everything in relationship to Krishna, see all living beings as connected to Krishna. And what is the result of that? The result is that such a person never hates anything or any being. Someone who sees that everything's a relationship with the Lord, and that, of course, took us into a conversation about, well, what about a disaster? How can you see that in relationship to the Supreme Lord? And how do you see everything? It says everything. So everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord. So this is the vision of the Mahatma. Mahatma means a great soul. Great soul means, as Krishna's definition in the Bhagavad Gita, well, first of all, I'll tell his definition of the learned person. He says, Vidyamanaya sampane brahmane gavihastani shuni chaiva shupake cha pandita samadarshina. That a pundit, a learned person, is someone who sees that within the learned Brahman and the dog eater, the elephant, there's the same spirit soul. He sees equally because he only sees the outward body as being different, and even that's a result of the person's karma, and it's a combination of material elements. So that's a learned person. Person is born and starts off as a baby and has a conception of eating everything, putting everything in its mouth, and sees things and says, mine. And then when baby gets a little bit older, she might start sharing with her mother or something. And when she gets a little bit older, she might think, well, maybe I'll help share with my family, and then maybe my town, and then maybe think about, well, I'll help everyone in my nation. And then think, well, why don't I help everybody in the world? Conception, the concentric circles are getting larger. But the Mahatma is somebody who sees that Krishna is the center of everything. Krishna is behind everything and knows how to do good for everyone and how to connect everything to Krishna. And therefore, that person has the greatest vision of all. It's not limited by a bodily conception of life or an extended bodily conception of life. It's based on understanding who's the source of everything. That's Krishna. So this idea is very much needed in the world, to come to the position of seeing everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord and seeing the Supreme Lord within everything. And we read the first several paragraphs of the purport, and the description was of three classes of devotees. And what is the first class that was named? Called Kanishta. Kanishta Adhikari means the like entry level. And then Madhyam, which means middle. And then Uttam. Uttam means which the highest or the greatest. So these three levels are mentioned. And the Kanishta Adhikari, as an entry-level person, sees that there's Supreme Lord, but only sees that he's within the temple, within the deity form, and comes to see the Lord there, but doesn't know how to recognize a devotee. And also doesn't know how to serve a devotee, and also doesn't know how to do good to other living beings. This is Kanishta Adhikari. And the Madhyama Adhikari is defined as someone who knows how to do good for others, and also has a practical way of distinguishing between one kind of entity and another. So he sees the Supreme Lord, he sees the devotees, he sees the innocent, and he sees those who are envious of the Supreme Lord. And for each one of them, he has a way of interacting. Towards the Supreme Lord, he gives his love. For all the devotees, he makes close friendships. For those who are innocent, he gives as much mercy as possible. And for those who are envious and who hate the idea of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he avoids them. So far, this is what we talked about in the purport, these three classes. Right? So now we're continuing on page 45, where we left off at the last paragraph on 45. It is clearly mentioned in this sixth mantra that one should observe or systematically see. What is the meaning of purpose?
gut systematic, we just distilled it down to purposeful regularity. And now purpose. It is clearly mentioned in this sixth mantra that one should observe or systematically see. This means that one must follow the previous acharyas, the perfected teachers. Anupashyati is the exact Sanskrit word used in this connection. Anu means to follow, and pashyati means to observe. Thus, the word anupashyati means that one should not see things as he does with the naked eye, but should follow the previous acharyas. Due to material defects, the naked eye cannot see anything properly. One cannot see properly unless one has heard from a superior source. And the highest source is the Vedic wisdom, which is spoken by the Lord himself. Vedic truths are coming in disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyas, and from Vyas to many of his disciples. Formerly, there was no need to record the messages of the Vedas, because people in earlier ages were more intelligent and had sharper memories. They could follow the instructions simply by hearing once from the mouth of a bona fide spiritual master. So today we were reading in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam a dialogue that took place between two great souls. One's named Vidura and the other's Maitreya. So Vidura was already a pure devotee in his own right. But still he went to a spiritual master. He wanted to learn from Uddhava. And Uddhava had just heard from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, and so had Maitreya. Uddhava had a direction from Krishna to go to Bhadarik Ashram, to teach the devotees in Bhadarik Ashram, who were very exalted, about pure devotional service, which he had heard just from the mouth of Krishna. And he had also seen for himself, because Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to witness for himself the level of devotion of the gopis. So when Vidura met Uddhava, he asked him to become his spiritual master, but Uddhava declined. He said, there's a superior person to me. There's Maitreya. Actually, Maitreya wasn't superior in devotional service to Uddhava, but he was superior in age. And by the law of Maryada Vitikrama, which means not to step over, not to transgress the etiquette and jump over, it was appropriate for Uddhava to refer Vidura to Maitreya. Maitreya happened to be with Krishna just before he left, and he overheard the whole conversation that Krishna and Uddhava had on all the instructions that Krishna gave to Uddhava. So he was right there. So he had heard everything. And he was also a very exalted personality. So Vidura went and met Maitreya, and he received instruction from him. And we're privy to that whole conversation, because that's what's in Srimad Bhagavatam. Much of the third canto is all the discussion between Maitreya and Vidura. Vidura asked questions. And he could have asked very complicated and esoteric questions to begin with, but he didn't. He started off with asking questions about the creation and questions that will clarify the very position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that everyone in the world would benefit. So while he was asking the questions, he was thinking about the world's benefit as well and how everyone else would hear. So we get to hear that. And in that conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, he asks about the spiritual world, what it's like. And Maitreya, through disciplic succession, he's heard about the spiritual world, exactly what it looks like, and he tells him. He gives him a description of what the residents in Vaikuntha look like, what they do there. As an example, they fly in airplanes. There are airplanes in Vaikuntha. But they don't have anything to do with commerce. There's no business trips, because there is no business to do there. Everyone's the wealthiest of the wealthy. They don't have to go anywhere or do anything. They're only there for pleasure trips. And there's men and women there, but there's no sexual attraction between the men and women, because they're so tasting such a high pleasure from their kirtan in Vaikuntha. All the variety that's there in the material world is just a reflection of that spiritual world.
So all variety is there within Vaikuntha, only it's not encumbered by the three modes of material nature, which means that whatever you have now that looks good will be soon distorted. Just like in a dream, you have some beautiful husband and a few seconds later he turns into an ugly monster. Well, the same thing happens in this world too. You have a beautiful husband, a few years later, you know, he ends up as a couch potato and doesn't want to go do anything. And next, you know, that things change just a bit, a little bit slower. It's the world of Maya and the transformations are taking place. And in the spiritual world, there's none of that transformation. So how do we know about that? We know by hearing. It's passed down through the process of sound vibration. We can't see the spiritual world with our eyes, nor can we go there. It's not possible to go there in our physical condition with our material body or our subtle physical body. But it will come to us, and it comes to us in the form of sound, so we can hear about it. And so that's how it's passed down through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we hear about how the Vedas, the Vedic truths, are coming into succession from Lord Brahma, and the student would simply listen and imbibe everything from the sound vibration. Even 500 years ago, when Nimai Pandit met the Digvijay Pandit, is evidence of the sharpness of the intelligence. Of course, Nimai Pandit was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still, this kind of listening and retention was available in bygone ages. The Digvijay Pandit, when asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, composed on the spot, extemporaneously, 100 Sanskrit verses. And he recited them like the blowing wind. He was asked by Chaitanya, by Nimai Pandit, say something in glorification of Mother Ganges. We want to hear your poetical skill. So just on the spot, he composed in his head 100 Sanskrit verses and recited them. Now Nimai Pandit was listening, and then he picked out one of the verses from the middle of all those 100, just from hearing it once. And he said, I'd like to hear a little bit more about this verse, and he recited the verse. And the Digvijay Pandit said, how did you remember that verse? I said them very quickly. And he said, well, some people are expert in poetry like you, and others are Shrutidhar. They can remember everything they hear. So he said, I just have that special talent. I can remember everything I hear. That was the Vedic culture, that students would listen to the spiritual master and imbibe these kinds of things. Vyasadeva especially noted that the age of Kali would be a diminished age, diminished intelligence, diminished attention span, always disturbed in every direction. Even 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have as many distractions as we do now. There were no cell phones, and there were no even now we don't have pagers anymore because they're all combined into one, but all these electronic devices and things like that were less. There was less distraction. More and more distraction nowadays. And so he wrote everything down, made sure it was compiled so we can hear it. It's the same information, and it's passed down so that we can hear it. And through the hearing process, we can realize Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. We come through hearing to remembering, and then to meditating, praying, all these things solidify in our consciousness, and we can become fully aware of an object that is far away. We can become fully aware of the spiritual world, which is far away, through the sound vibration. And in this, we must also, anupashyati means, anu means to follow, and pashyati means to see. So we systematically see, and we systematically follow, and we see by following. We don't speculate. We don't try to see things just with our own eyes or experience them through our senses, although that is an obvious thing that we do on a regular basis. We don't discount that altogether, but it must be corroborated, and we take as our final evidence what we hear from the Vedas and from the Vedic corollaries, which are the Puranas, which explain what the Vedas mean. If you try to understand the Vedas
yourself. It's a jungle of sound, and you won't find your way through it. Krishna says as much in the Bhagavad Gita. And all of that has been compiled, and has been condensed, and has been presented in a way that we can understand it, and this is called Anupashyati. Therefore, for instance, in the Bhagavad Gita as it is, we have a book which is which gives us the commentary of those who have heard from a spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada heard from his spiritual master, who heard from his spiritual master, going back all the way to Krishna. And therefore we hear the commentaries and the direction in each one of the verses so that we can clearly follow in the proper way. I remember when I first started reading Bhagavad Gita, it wasn't a Bhagavad Gita as it is. It was just a Bhagavad Gita with translations. And from reading that, I had made it my own ideas about what was what. And then I read the purports when I got the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I said, oh, that's what that means. Clarifies everything. So when we have that kind of direction, Anupashyati, and we follow, then we're actually walking in the path of the Mahatmas. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananya manaso gyatva putatim avyayam. The Mahatma is somebody who's under protection of the divine nature, and part of that is keeping oneself under the shelter of spiritual sound. The spiritual sound vibration is what directs us. So really, from morning till night, throughout our day, we should keep ourselves focused on the spiritual sound vibration and the direction that comes from that. Then we'll be walking in the right direction. Anupashyati, we'll be following correctly. Living a life like that, anyone from any position can come to the perfection of life. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha, look it up in your shloka book. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumba Yavana Kasaraya Yeneja Papa Yadapashraya Shreya Shujanti Tasmai Pravivishnave Namaha. This is a verse spoken by Shukadev Goswami, and it names all kinds of people who have no qualification for Vedic culture. They're born outside the Vedic system. But it says that every single one of them has the opportunity to come to the highest position because of the power of Lord Vishnu. And if you connect with that power, then you can purify yourself, come to the highest position. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha. Page? 200. And the verse number is? 2.4.18. Okay, here's the translation. Kirata, Huna, Andra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Apira, Shumba, Yavana. Members of the Kasa races and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, due to His being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. And I'm going to read an excerpt from the purport. And that is, according to the cult of devotion, generally known as the Vaishnav cult, there is no bar against anyone's advancing in the matter of God realization. A Vaishnav is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnav, even the Kirata, etc., as above mentioned. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, it is said by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord, even for those who are low-born, or women, Shudras, or Vaishyas, and by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them from by purification of heart. How does he reclaim them? By purification of heart. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure devotee, with a pure Vaishnav. Again, there's the word systematic. Systematic contact with a pure Vaishnav. A Vaishnav, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnav who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste or Varnashram Dharma is no longer regular even amongst the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it now possible to reestablish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnav cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. So, by order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Who can be reclaimed? Anyone who is willing to accept the transcendental cult. Are you willing to accept the transcendental cult? That's be a good line on book distribution. Are you willing to accept the transcendental cult? Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnav never accepts another Vaishnav on the basis of birthright, just as he never thinks of the deity of the Lord in a temple as an idol. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Shukadeva Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord, who is all-powerful, Pravavishnave Namaha. As the all-powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee in devotional activities of the Archan, his form as the worshipful deity in the temple. Similarly, the body of a pure Vaishnav changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnav. The injunction of Vaishnav regulation in this connection runs as follows. Arche Vishnu Shila Dhir Gurushu Naramatir Vaishnave Jati Bhuti Shri Vishnu Namni Shabda Samanya Bhutihi, etc. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol, nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man, nor should one consider a pure Vaishnav to belong to a particular caste, etc. That's from the Padma Purana. Where is it from? The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites. And he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. That is the way of self-realization. What did you remember from that excerpt of the purport? Yes. You got to use the microphone because there's people all over the world listening in.
That Vaishnav can accept anyone who accepts transcendental cult, even if he is from out of caste system.
Nice.
As Lord Chaitanya did.
Okay. Thank you. What else?
The Lord, being powerful, can accept anybody from any condition at any time according to his will.
Yes. Do you remember the Sanskrit for that? Prabhavishnave Namaha. Prabhavishnave. Any other thing?
One's body changes when one's ready to accept.
When one is ready to accept Vaishnava, the transcendental cult, one's body changes. That's what I thought I heard. And I was going to say that What you read, is that what is meant when they say that this line of teaching is non-sectarian?
Yes, it's non-sectarian. That's what we mean. Yeah. Yes.
That even a most sinful, wretched person can become purified if he follows the instructions, or if he takes shelter of a pure devotee. Yes. Specifically says take shelter of a devotee rather than taking shelter of Krishna.
Yeah. One more thing from Acharya Chandra. Go ahead, Acharya.
Yeah, I've heard that the deities in the temple should be worshipped as God, not as idols. And I was thinking during this conversation about that, and I thought that this is what we can do, actually. I mean, it's not something which we cannot do, like chanting purely Hare Krishna mantra. But when we see God, we don't have to think that this is just statue or something. We should serve it as God. That's how our mentality is supposed to turn towards deities.
Yes.
And it's easy. That's what we can do, actually, in our stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we should do. Serve the deities as a God.
Thank you. Brother?
It's also talked about... anyone can be purified by systematic association with pure devotees.
Yeah, that word systematic came in. A Vaishnava is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnava, even the Kirata, etc., as mentioned above mentioned. And then he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita 9:32. Does everyone know the verse? Do you know the verse, 9:32? Do you know where it is? Okay, you better look at it. Take a look. One thing is, you can learn these verses by exposure. Previously, people used to learn by hearing. They just hear it, and then they just pick it up. And you can do that to some extent, but it really helps, especially in this age. We have everything written down on paper. A lot of trees were sacrificed for this purpose. So we should honor them by... Whenever we hear a verse, if you take the time to actually turn to it, doing that little tapasya, it's such a good habit to get into. And every time you look at the verse, you orient yourself in your mind where it is, and you take a look at it, and it makes an impression in your head. So 9:32, page 115 in the Shloka book, and what page in your Bhagavad Gita? 439, okay. Shall we sing the verse? Okay. 9:32.
You want to sing? Mani partha vyapashritya ye
pisu papayo nayaha sriyo vaishastata shudras te piyanti paramgatim.
O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, that is merchants, and sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination.
Okay, so that's another reference where Krishna himself says, anyone from, it is said that the Lord, there is no bar to anyone becoming a devotee of the Lord. And by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart. That's another one, by purification of heart. You're nodding. You have something to say. Okay.
I'm also just thinking that this is just an incident where Prabhupada is clearly explaining not only who can become a devotee, but also who can become a guide of devotees or a spiritual master. And this is showing the how the disciplic succession is, or the parampara is a succession of living persons, and that the qualifications there are clearly mentioned. And this is how it goes on. Just an example of hundreds of examples in Prabhupada's books where we can find this in clarity about how one becomes a disciple, how one becomes a guru, and how the process by the will of the Lord, by the power of the Lord, how people become purified and connected to Him.
This statement Prabhupada has here, one who is well conversant in the science of Krishna, becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people, and may reclaim them by purification of heart. It's a wonderful sentence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudrakena noi ye Krishna tatva veta she guru hoy." That it's the same statement that one who is conversant with the science of Krishna consciousness, ye Krishna tattva, tattva, if you know Krishna tattva, veta, in truth, she guru hoy, then you become a guru. This is the qualification. So same thing that Prabhupada is saying here.
He particularly points out one who's knowledgeable of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, I heard Prabhupada say this morning that if you make a study of Srimad Bhagavatam in your entire lifetime, with full concentration, you won't come to the end of it. And you can try it yourself. Just drop everything you're doing now. Tell your boss you're not coming in anymore. And make a full study of Srimad Bhagavatam and see how far you get. It's so deep. There's so many things to consider and so much to learn in Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's so nectarian that just by doing that, you can spend a whole lifetime. I heard this morning also that Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was, his main service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the author says he attained complete perfection by that activity. The two sections that he read particularly that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liked to hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam, do you know what they are? The two sections that he relished over and over again.
One is in Canto 10.
Actually, it was Prahlad Maharaj. The pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. These two really set the stage for the 10th canto, because without this, Prahlad Maharaj was the quintessential devotee who was tested thoroughly and came out with complete purity. Throughout his lifetime, he was born in the family of a demon. That really goes along with this concept, Hirata Hunandrapu, doesn't matter where you're from. He was born with demon blood running through his veins. And I mean, according to the Smarta culture, the Smarta Brahmin culture, unless you're born as a Brahmin, you can't attain success, nor should you even apply for the spiritual science or consider yourself part of the process. What to speak of, become a spiritual master. However, Prahlad Maharaj, from that point of view, is completely unqualified. His father was the biggest demon who ever lived, arguably. And he simply heard the science from a pure devotee, and not only did he hear, he got the goodwill of a pure devotee. And throughout the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, we find that he credited all of his success in spiritual life to his spiritual master. Over and over again, he says, it's all due to my spiritual master's mercy that I'm able to approach the Lord. he was born in unfavorable circumstances, and then when his father found out that he was a devotee and his father was against that, his father tried to kill him, and he tortured him. And Prahlad never gave up chanting Hare Krishna. He never gave up preaching Krishna consciousness, and he never gave up his devotion. Nor was he afraid. He simply took shelter of Krishna. After all that, he was tested again when Lord Nrsimhadev appeared. All the demigods, although they could understand this is some form of Vishnu, they'd never seen anything like it. Neither had Lakshmi Devi seen anybody like it, and that's her husband. And they were all afraid because, first of all, they were tested, and they didn't really pass the test, the demigods, because Hiranyakashipu was so powerful, he beat the system. There's a system in the universe. And he beat it thoroughly, so much so that all the demigods were following Hiranyakashipu. They went to him for everything. And if he moved his eyebrows, Prahlad Maharaj says later, then they would cower because he was so powerful. This is not the way it's supposed to be, but he beat the natural system of the universe and he took over and he made them subservient to him through his tapasya. And so they were starting to question the actual order of the universe, of whether, you know, is all this stuff true? So there is a little bit of a doubt in the minds of the demigods. They were afraid when he was fighting with Lord Nrsimhadev. They thought maybe he'd win. They were starting to think, you know, I mean, look at what he's done already. What if we lose here? They were behind the clouds thinking, if he saw us cheering for Lord Nrsimhadev, what if Lord Nrsimhadev loses? Then what's he going to do to us? They're Sakama devotees. They have some desire to stay in the material world. At the same time, they're devotees. So they had something to lose, and therefore they felt this fear. But Prahlad Maharaj had no fear. He passed that test. And even when Lord Nrsimhadev appeared, he had no fear of him. He said that I'm not afraid of your teeth, your roaring, your blood-soaked mane, the intestines you've hung around your neck like a garland. I mean, that's a horrible scene. And what to speak of Nrsimhadev was roaring so loud that the whole universe was being disturbed. And he said, I'm not afraid of you at all. You're my Lord. But what I am afraid of is the process of birth and death, and that I could fall back down into it at any time. And then he got tested. Lord Nrsimhadev said, Prahlad, I'm the Supreme Bhagavan. I'm going to give you a benediction. Take a benediction. Prahlad says, I'm not a vanik. I'm not a mercantile person. I'm not serving you because I want a benediction. No, thank you. And Bhagavan said again, take a benediction. And Prahlad said, no, certainly not. I'm not serving you for any benediction. Bhagavan said, take a benediction. I give benediction. Then this is the Vaishnav mentality. He said, okay, I understand. You want me to take a benediction. I don't want a benediction, but you want me to take a benediction. Therefore, I'll take a benediction. That's Vaishnavic. That the Vaishnav will do whatever Krishna wants. And if he says, take a benediction, he'll take a benediction. So he also passed that test, spotlessly pure. This is the platform from which one can advance in devotional service, and the spotless character of Prahlad Maharaj is glorified within the Srimad Bhagavatam, saying such things as, he is the greatest devotee of the Lord, surpassing the devotion of every resident of Vaikuntha. We're talking about eternal associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha who have never touched the material energy ever. And he's greater. Why? Because he was tested. And he passed those tests. So the icon of Prahlad Maharaj and his purity is what's required to enter into the 10th canto or any of the other devotional pursuits. We should follow in his footsteps. Anupashyati. So, yes? Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva. Dhruva had such determination. He was also a young boy. And it's also said that the gopis, when they would hear the stories of Prahlad and Dhruva, they would weep. Because they were so tender-hearted, they would think that these young boys, Prahlad being tortured by his father, Dhruva going off in the forest when he was a five-year-old, they would weep thinking of the devotion of these devotees. And this also shows that the gopis of Vrindavan, who are considered by everyone, including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to be the highest, Ramya Kachirupasana Vrajaviduva Vargena Vakalpita, that there is no method of devotional service which is higher, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's opinion was, than that of the gopis of Vrindavan. But what are they thinking? They're weeping when they hear about Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj. This is the symptom of an advanced devotee, that the advanced devotee is appreciating the devotion of others. It's not that the devotee in the highest position is thinking, I'm in the highest position, those other people are nowhere, because I'm in Madhurya Ras, and they're just, you know, they're nothing. Prahlad Maharaj is named as being in Shanta Ras. But the gopis were appreciating him, weeping, thinking of him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also hearing over and over again. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we should hear the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj 100 times. That's a good goal. Hear that 100 times. Tell your boss you're not coming in. I got to hear the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj 100 times. So we're coming back to the focus, which was from this purport, we heard that we must follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and that's called anupashyati. And that way we see. We see through the acharyas, we see how they lived their life, how they were tested, how Thakur Haridas, who is the, some say, partial incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, he was beaten in 21 marketplaces and didn't protest. He went on chanting Hare Krishna. He never gave it up, just like Prahlad Maharaj never gave it up. This is the symptom of the pure devotee. So we're continuing on the purport on page number 46. And after that, we'll hear what the definition of purpose is. At present, there are many commentaries on the revealed scriptures, but most of them are not in the line of disciplic succession coming from Srila Vyasadeva, who originally compiled the Vedic wisdom. The final, most perfect and sublime work by Srila Vyasadeva is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam what Vyasadeva went through to compile that book. And in the fifth chapter of the first canto, we find that Vyasadeva, the great literary incarnation of God, was lamenting. He was morose. He was not feeling satisfied in his devotional service. He had done so much service. What he had done? Compile the Vedas and make them available to everyone. And he came to his spiritual master. He says, I don't feel right. I don't feel very good about myself. And Narada said, you shouldn't, because you didn't present what will actually purify people. You didn't give the spotless pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God. It's the only thing that will actually cure people. And even though he was completely sense-controlled, Vyasadeva, because he hadn't given the very explicit description of the highest thing, which is Krishna, in Goloka Vrindavan, it wasn't to be satisfying to Vyasadeva or to anybody else. In fact, in those terms, Narada Muni says, whatever you desire to describe that is different in vision from this vision given that he gives later in the Srimad Bhagavatam will simply disturb the mind, like a boat that's disturbed by the wind on the water. So this is Vikriditam Vrajavadurvir Ahamcha Vishnu. This Shukadeva Goswami says about the Srimad Bhagavatam that the pastimes, the very personal pastimes of Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world can cure the disease of the heart. Hrid Rogam Ashvapahinot Yapacharenigtira. He says Hrid Rogam. It doesn't sound good, right? Hrid means heart and Rogam means the disease of the heart. So Hrid Rogam, you don't want that. Hridrogam means the heart is hardened. And when I hear of the success of someone else, I become morose. Oh, they're successful? They're excelling? Ah, that's terrible. I feel bad. I wish they would fall down. I wish they would, curl up and die. So I'll look better. This is Hridrogam. It's envy within the heart. This is the material disease. Hridrogam. Ashpa apahinoti. Apahinoti means it gets destroyed by hearing about the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world. So it was a very specific thing that Vyasadeva heard from his spiritual master. He said, go back and write about that. And Vyas went, and he had gone into a trance, the trance of Vyas. He went into complete samadhi, and he realized for himself the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world. And when he came out of his samadhi, he wrote it down. This is samadhi bhasha. You want some samadhi bhasha? When the Vyas comes out of samadhi, you want to hear what he had to say. That's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's available to us. And so Srila Prabhupada's saying here that the final, most perfect and sublime work by Srila Vyasadeva, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, it explains what the Vedas are all about. What is the pinnacle? And even in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear that nigama kalpataro galitam palam shukamukharam rita drava samyutam. Drava. It means this is what you're getting in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's pre-digested. It's semi-solid. It's like a smoothie. You don't even have to be awake. You can just drink it. You get all the nourishment and the satisfaction. It's relishable. It's been relished by the souls. Nigama kalpataro galitam phalam. It's the fruit that's coming from the nigamas. You have the nigamas and the agamas, and you have all this complication of the Vedas going this way and that way. And Krishna says trigunya vishaya veda nishtrigunya vabarjuna. Mostly it's about how to get along in this world, how to avoid getting crushed by the three modes of material nature, make a progressive path to come up to some position of human life. And then there's the transcendental portion of the Vedas, the Upanishads, which barely anybody can understand. They misinterpret it, and they think, oh, I read this, I'm God, now I've got it figured out. And they go tell it, I'm God, I read it right here in the book. So to come to this position of understanding the fruit of all the nigamas and to actually have it in your hand, and then it's pre-digested, it's been processed through the beak of a pure devotee, like a parrot who bites on the beak of a mango and then makes it sweeter than it was before, and you can just drink it. You drink it, and then you get intoxicated, and you fall down, and you get back up, and you drink some more. That's what the pure devotees do with this kind of nectar. And so this is what's being presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the final, most perfect and sublime work by Srila Vyasadeva, Srimad Bhagavatam. Call your boss. Tell him I quit. I found the real thing. It's the pre-digested nectar that's coming from all the wisdom and knowledge of the Vedas, which is the essence of everything. And it's all in this one book, and it's the real intoxicating beverage that everyone's looking for everywhere. And I have it. And I'm not coming in. I'm staying here. I'm going to read this until I fall down intoxicated and get up again. That's what Sanatan Goswami did. He told his boss, I'm sick. I can't come in. And after a few weeks, his boss sent in the doctor, where's Sanatan? And he saw him in there with a bunch of Brahmins reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And he went back to his boss and said, he's not sick. So his boss came in and said, what's with you? You're not sick. You're in here with all these Brahmins. Sanatan said, get someone else. I quit. He said, you're going to jail. He said, throw me in jail, whatever you want. Interesting story about Sanatan Goswami. Look at him. Tyakva Turna Mashesha Mandalapati. It's mentioned by Srinivas Acharya. These great, exalted, educated, wealthy people, Sanatan, Rupa Goswami, they just gave it up. Usually when someone is accustomed to a certain standard of life, when they have to step down by 2 inches, they go crazy. And I see it all the time when I travel. People that I have all the time when it flights overbooked, people, they always fly first class. Or they always fly business class, but somehow they got bumped and they're sitting back with me and coach. And they just like, I'm not supposed to be here. I don't belong back here. This is not me. You know, they can't stand it. 2 inches back, you know. But they gave up everything, all aristocratic association, all their wealth, everything. In fact, if you read the story of Sanatan Goswami, how he got out of jail, he bribed his way out. He told the jailkeeper he was going to Mecca, and he told him a story that tells Sanatan jumped in the water and he drowned, and then he gave him so much gold the guy couldn't say no. Then he ran away with his servant, Ishana, who followed him. He was up in the mountains. And there, they still had some gold with them. And so the jailkeeper could tell, he had an astrologer that could tell that he actually had gold with him, and they were going to kill him that night. He was being too nice, the innkeeper. He was saying, yo, stay here, take the better room, everything. And Sanatan was a minister to the king. He knew what politics, and that too much devotion is a sign of a thief. So he went to his servant and he said, you know, how much gold are you carrying with him? And he said, I've got 8 pieces of gold. And so he said, give those to me. So he took the gold and he said, here. He gave them to the innkeeper. He said, here, I know, you know, you probably want this, right? And the gatekeeper said, innkeeper said, what a relief. I was going to kill you for those tonight. He said, our astrologer told us that you have 9 pieces of gold. So then Sanatan knew that Ishana still had one. He kept it. So Sanatan, then he said, listen, keep this gold. Just show me how to get out of here. Show me how to go over these hills in the mountain so I can escape. I can't go by, I'm a political prisoner. I have to go. I'm going to Mecca. I'm getting out of the system. Just help me out. Here's your gold. So he showed him across. And then when he got to the top, he told Ishana, he said, I know you have one more piece of gold. You go home. I'm going by myself. When he did that, nothing left. No 8 pieces, no 1 piece, no nothing. He left his kingdom behind. He was so happy. Imagine that. In that instant, when he's walking in the hills, he's going to find Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's left everything behind for the sake of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his real life begins. And now in his heart, he feels complete joy. Chaktva turnam ashesha mandalapati. Shrenim sada tuchavat. Tuchavat means it's insignificant. In the light of finding the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there, he's got a marketplace, it's open, it's ready to go. The excitement of the Krishna consciousness movement is unparalleled if we understand what it actually is. How did so many young people give up everything and come and join the Krishna consciousness movement in the 1960s and 70s and 80s? And 90s, and 2000s. It's because there's something here that you can't get anywhere else. And it is the treasure of life. And if you realize that it's there, everything else seems insignificant. It is insignificant. Bhutva bhutva praliyate, Krishna says, you can have the whole universe, but it'll be destroyed. You can't keep it. But this Srimad Bhagavatam is the eternal vibration coming from the spiritual world, is coming from the likes of Srila Vyasadeva, coming from his samadhi, seeing directly the spiritual world. And it's enticing us, it's calling us, saying, taste it for yourself. It's not some dry religion. It's not something that is theoretical. It's you, your experience, your relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All this is at stake here. And you have a very little time to get it all. To get it all in. When you realize how great this is and you realize how little time you have to actually cultivate it all, you'll go crazy. Because it's the greatest thing. And we have a window of opportunity. About 5 seconds. Very little time to get our legs and to take this as much as possible. So this is the price to pay for entering into the spiritual life. There is no material price to pay for advancing in spiritual life. There's nothing you can do from the material side through wealth, through education, that will qualify for spiritual life. There's one price, and that's intense desire to have it. Intense desire to have it. So, at present, there are many commentaries on the revealed scriptures, but most of them are not in the line of disciplic succession coming from Srila Vyasadeva, who originally compiled the Vedic wisdom. The final, most perfect and sublime work by Srila Vyasadeva is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. There is also the Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by the Lord himself and recorded by Vyasadeva. Once someone asked Srila Prabhupada, is the Bhagavad Gita Shruti or Smriti? Shruti means the original Vedas. Smriti means the explanation of the Vedas given by the great sages. Which is it? Shruti or Smriti? It's both. And that's exactly what he said. He told the Chutananda Maharaj in a letter that it's both because it's Smriti because it comes after the original Vedas, but it's Shruti because it was spoken by the mouth of the Supreme Personality of God. So what a jewel we have in the Bhagavad Gita. These two books, Prabhupada named in the purport earlier, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Make your life around these, and you have perfection. These are the most important revealed scriptures in any commentary that contradicts the principles of the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam is unauthorized. There is complete agreement among the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam, and no one should try to reach any conclusion about the Vedas without receiving instructions from members of Vyasadeva's disciplic succession who believe in the personality of Godhead in his diverse energies as they are explained in Sri Upanishad. That was a long sentence, but the point is very important, and that is, along with the books come a whole cadre of people who have followed the tradition, who have imbibed the tradition, who know the tradition, and you have to live with them. You have to consult with them. You have to follow that process. This is called anupashyati. It's not just reading the book. It's also being in that line with the people. You see, you observe, you learn from a teacher. There are subtleties that you get. And this is anupashyati. All this brings us in an infallible way back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, back home, back to Godhead. This is the process being discussed. Last paragraph. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Here we go. You can bank your whole life on this last paragraph. According to the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, only one who is already on the liberated platform, Brahma-Bhuta, can become an Uttama-Adhikari devotee and see every living being as his own brother. This vision cannot be had by politicians who are always after some material gain. One who imitates the symptoms of an Uttama-Adhikari may serve another's outward body for the purpose of fame or material reward, but he does not serve the spirit soul. Such an imitator can have no information of the spiritual world. The Uttama-Adhikari sees the spirit soul within the material body and serves him as spirit. Thus, the material aspect is automatically served. A couple really important points there. One is that you can't be on the take. If you're on the take, you can't purely help others, and you can't see them as pure spirit souls. Nishkama. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Ataiva Shanta. Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Ashanta. Kaviraj Goswami says that everyone's disturbed in this world who has some material desire. And he names Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami. These people have some kind of kam. They're kamis. So they have Bhukti, means material enjoyment. That I want some money. Material life means money. That's all it means. It means I want money because money is the honey. And people die for it. Now that's not my phraseology. That comes from Prahlad Maharaj. He says in his instructions to his schoolmates, he says, money is the honey. Yeah. And he says that people will die for money. People right now, they're in Japan, they're working on this project to shut down the, what are those, nuclear reactors? Of course, they're not exactly working for money anymore. But they're giving up their life for that occupation. Prabhupada names mercenaries who will join an army and they'll go off to war and fight for money and they die. And there's people all the time that do kinds of work that are very dangerous, like underwater soldering, underwater, what are they called? Welding, underwater welding is a very dangerous occupation. It pays a lot, but people die all the time doing that kind of work. Money's the honey. So bhukti means people are working hard. They have an interest in this world. They want something back. And even if they give you something, they're thinking, what am I going to get back for it? That's bhukti. It's motivated, not peaceful. If someone gives you $1 million, next thing you'll think, not you, next thing a bhukti would think is, how am I going to invest it? What if I lose it? How am I going to... why didn't I get 2 million? I only have one. So many material desires that are unlimited. They come over and over again. Bhukti, not peaceful. Mukti means, and that's such a person with those kinds of desires can't honestly help others. They can't really do anything for another person because they're self-interested. They want something out of it. Now we have the muktis. The muktis have made a mistake. They've renounced the world, which is not theirs to renounce. It doesn't belong to them, but they've made an erroneous statement that I reject the world. These are the muktis. I'm giving it up. I'm taking liberation. No more to do with the material world. This is incorrect, because it's not your world to give up, and you can't do it anyway, because eventually you'll come back to the variety of the material world. So the muktis can't help anyone either, because they're no longer socially engaged. They see the world as irrelevant, as disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they don't know how to connect people properly to their real welfare, and they can't help. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi. Siddhis are another kind of very subtle material enjoyment. By practicing yoga, one can develop a high level of control over the subtle material energies of the material world. And that becomes a kind of intoxication and an enticement to stay here and be a little controller. And such a person also can't help people. But the bhakta is completely peaceful. So Krishna bhakta nishkam. He has no kam. He has no material desire. Atayiva shanta. And therefore he's completely peaceful. And he knows how to do good for others. Because there's now room in his heart to think about the welfare of other people. Sarva bhuta hitairataha. Krishna says in the 5th chapter of the Gita that that's the preoccupation of the devotee, of thinking how to do the best they can to help other people. So that can't be artificially done. That's what Prabhupada's saying in the last paragraph here. You can't artificially just say that I'm the well-wisher of all living beings. You have to have actual purity of heart. You actually have to become a Mahatma. A Mahatma means your heart is as big as the sky. There's room there because you've pushed everything else out, because your interest in life is aligned with Krishna's interest. And therefore, you become a great soul. Your activities are feeding the center. The center is Krishna. And you see that the center is everywhere, actually, because Krishna is everywhere. Prahlad Maharaj had that vision even when Hiranyakashipu said, "Is your God in that pillar?" He said, "Yeah, I see him there too." And Hiranyakashipu found out that that was true. So this verse is the verse which tells us the actual standard for real happiness and the standard for the highest level of a devotee. And that is, and it also tells us the process to reach it ourselves, which is in one word, which is a dual word, anupashyati. We have to see by following. And even if we're not already on that platform, if we are following strictly those who are, that qualifies us. If you're strictly following, even if you're not to the standard yet, then it's compared to a ripe mango or a green mango. Mango's a mango, but it'll become ripe. It'll come to that position. Dayaniti Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I have two questions, and if you feel that they're not proper, because I know that I should just simply be asking, how can I serve? But I'm just curious about a couple things. First of all, Prahlad Maharaj, he heard this, he heard from Narada Muni while he was in the womb of his mother. And so I'm wondering, first of all, did he have some pre-qualification? And if not, what did he do to follow while he was in the womb? Because his mother apparently did not follow. His mother also heard Narada Muni speak, but she did not become a devotee or a pure devotee. I'm pretty sure about that. But Prahlad did. So what was it that Prahlad did that made him a follower, besides just hearing, because they both heard? So do you understand the question?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you asked, did he have any pre-qualification? And there is some story in the Puranas about Prahlad's previous life that he was... he had had some a tryst with a prostitute. But it was in the jungle. And there was a temple, an old temple, it was grown over. He was going to meet the prostitute there. And they got there, and it was a very special Ekadashi day. And they ended up arguing about the price of the transaction. And so because they were arguing all day long, they never they didn't eat on Ekadashi. They fasted all day. And also, they didn't realize that they were in an old temple, but they cleaned the temple because they were, you know, trying to get it a little bit cleaned up. So they've cleaned the temple on Ekadashi. They fasted all day. They never engaged in the act. And Puranas say that there was some, because of that, on Ekadashi, on that day, it doesn't say what happened to the woman, but Prahlad, there was some indication that, you know, some carryover was there. But in other places we hear that Prahlad was, you know, an eternally liberated soul, but he was acting as a sadhana siddha. The main thing that we hear is that Prahlad was favored by his spiritual master, and that even though he was within the womb, because he had received the special favor of Narada Muni, he was... thank you. He was elevated very quickly. And we did read recently in the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada was talking about how one can become, one who gets the favor of the spiritual master can become elevated even without following the regulative principles. So there's an intangible there that comes from special mercy, kripa siddha. And, you know, the mother was there, Prahlad was there. Prabhupada was just saying, you know, see how qualified Prahlad was compared to his mother, because she was, you know, directly hearing, he was in the womb hearing the vibration, but he got more. So it's also not unreasonable. And we see all the time in the world that things are not stereotyped. People all the time, somebody will come to the same program or class or hear the same thing. One person will be motivated and the other person will go to sleep. You know, people are in different levels and stations in life. Did that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great answer. The other one is actually a little more ridiculous, probably. Well, not that that was ridiculous, but
that wasn't ridiculous at all. It was a great question. So, you know, just so you know.
Thanks.
Good question.
Okay. The other one is, I was just wondering. We were talking about the. I was thinking about Japan and the nuclear reactors, and the people that are actually staying there in order to put this reactor, you know, back online and cool it and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
They're probably risking their lives to do this. So I'm wondering, you know, those that are actually risking their lives for something that is material or whatever. In other words, someone who's risking their life for other people who are not, you know, devotees or whatever. Is there some benefit there that's, you know, spiritual benefit, or is there any, you know, or is it simply just some, you know, good karma that you get from doing that?
Yeah, it's more in the realm of karma. And we hear about this stark truth in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's divisions of the modes of material nature, divisions of faith, and Arjuna wants to know what happens to people who perform all kinds of activities with full faith when they're not in accord with scripture. And Krishna tells him, what are the results? And they're very much different from a spiritual outcome, or, you know, or something, or a sacrifice performed in complete knowledge, which is described at the end of that chapter for the sake of Om Tat Sat, of the Supreme. That's where it's aimed. Anything done without faith in the Supreme, Krishna says, has no result at all spiritually. It's not considered. So people perform all kinds of tapasya in the material world, but the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that as shrama. Shrama means useless labor. Shrama evahi kevalam. And it says it three ways in an imperative. Shrama Eva hi kevalam, three words which mean absolutely, positively, without doubt. So the idea is that unless something is connected to the Supreme, it's not really valuable. That's pretty straightforward. Yes.
I thought maybe they're still doing something good because there are some, like, devotees live in this world, and if it really go bad and blow up all this station, the radiation may come here, you know, and disturb our Sankirtan. So I kind of feel thankful for those people who is...
Well, then you get into the realm of agyata sukriti, which means that you might do something that... you know, somehow you come in contact with devotees and you help somebody else who is engaged in devotional service, or you do some service unknowingly, and that can give you an elevation in devotional service. From the other side, go ahead. From the other side, the devotees now are contemplating what to do in this situation. Because there's a lot of relief work to do in Japan right now. And so therefore, you know, they're thinking of doing different kinds of relief work. Some of the Food for Life experts are already on their way or getting ready to go to Japan, Priyavrata and his team. And in the course of doing what seems to be ordinary kinds of relief work, they will also... Their idea is, you know, it gets connected to Krishna because people see Krishna devotees out distributing, and besides that, it's prasadam that they give. And in the course of that, they meet devotees and they tell them about Krishna consciousness in a time when they're distressed and vulnerable. And they really are. Even the devotees, I talked to them today, had a class on the Skype, and I could tell from talking to the devotees there that they're really... obviously, jangled by the whole thing. And they were asking a lot of questions about, you know, what's the best way to help people in this kind of situation. And the same kind of topics come up about what's the best thing to do to help people. in all kinds of circumstances, including in an emergency. So, I'm sorry, Satya, go ahead.
Well, I was, maybe it was last night or the other night before, I've been reading the Gita Mahatmya. And can we take the Gita Mahatmya as scripture?
I'd have to research that. I think, you know, some of it is, I'll just have to research the validity of it. I'd have to talk to Gopi Paramanandana about the origin of it and how it's been passed down. Because there are some shastras like Brahma Vaivarta Purana that some of our scholars, and it was, we just heard about it here, that if it's not corroborated with the Srimad Bhagavatam, then there are ways that we don't accept. There are certain Puranas that we have that we can't corroborate. So my answer is I'd have to do a little more research to answer that correctly.
I just read a story in there that kind of goes to the point about working to save others and that being pleasing to Vishnu, but I don't know if I should tell the story because I don't know if it's a bona fide scripture or not. So maybe I shouldn't tell the story then. Huh?
Yeah, we better check it first.
Scratch that one.
Yes, Rakshit.
Yes, regarding these workers who are there, trying to fix the reactor. Firstly, they have to do the job as part of their duty. If they abandoned it, then they are shirking their duty. They are, first of all, employed as workers, and so they are doing it. But isn't it also possible that being in such a crisis situation, that among those workers there are devotees? They may at that time think about the Lord and even invoke the help of the Lord to help them under this crisis situation for the people they are helping, that it is they can look at the situation and say that this requires divine help. Even if their bosses may say, clean up or do this, it may occur to them that it requires divine help. They may think about the Lord, invoke his mercy, and their actions may become valuable. Isn't
it
possible?
The same question someone asked today on the call from Japan. And the answer that I gave today was from the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvida bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasa artarti gyani cha bharatarshabha tesham gyani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyohi gyani no tyartam aham sacha mama priyaha udarak sarav evaite gyani tvatvai mame matam asita sahiyukta ma mame vam utamam gatim. So he gives these three verses that talk about this. So he's talking here about people who have sukriti. Sukriti is a kind of a wealth. And those who have some sukriti, the spiritual capital, when they get in distress, when they are in need of money, these are the things that Krishna mentions, when they're inquisitive, and when they're in knowledge of the absolute truth, then these kinds of people, they turn towards Krishna. And then he says, of those, tesham gyani nitya yukta eka bhakti vishishyate, the gyani, the one who's wise, is the best. And previous to that, Krishna names four kinds of people who never turn towards him because they lack this sukriti. And even if they're given the Vedas, they misinterpret them. And they say, oh yeah, I read that. There is no God. I don't know what you guys are talking about. And then there's people who are mudhas. They're like animals. And they just work and work and work and they think that's it. Then there's the, give me the verse, what is? I'm sorry. No, just before that. Namam duskritina muda prapadyante naradama Maya Pritagyana Asuram Pavamasrita. So these four kinds of impious people. Impious means they don't have any Sukriti. So these kinds of people, Naradama means the lowest among mankind. They don't have any principles. They're unprincipled and they don't have any Sukriti. The Maya Pritagyana means that they're very intelligent. They've been blessed with a good brain, but they have no Sukriti. Therefore, they use their intelligence to deny God. And the mudhas, who are just like animals. Did we cover them all?
Duskritino.
And duskritino means the person. Kriti means, sukriti means you have some intelligence and you can do good for others. Duskriti means you're very expert at doing bad for others. Bad to others. So these kinds of four kinds of people don't turn towards Krishna. And mogasha mogakarmano moga gyanavichetasa rakshasima surim chaiva prakitim mohinim shritaha. Krishna says people who have demoniac mentality and don't have any qualification, they get baffled in all their attempts, in their karma, in their jnana. And mogasha mogakarmano moga gyanavichetasa rakshasima surim chaiva. They have a demoniac mentality. So your premise was, there's a disaster. And won't that help people become get closer to God because they're in a state? And to one degree, yes, we have this concept of shmashana vairagya, which means the renunciation of the crematorium. Ram nam satyahe. When someone dies and you're carrying around the body, everyone goes, yeah, it's all true. The name of Ram is really true, and this material world's really temporary. And then the body's burned, and you go back to work, and 3 days later it wears off. And you think, oh well, look at doctors all the time. They're cutting open bodies, and they see that there's a heart beating inside, and all this kind of stuff. And then how could they be attracted to that, to the physical body? I'm serious question. By the power of Maya. So there is a way that people who have piety already within them, they're in a stressful condition, that they will turn to God. And Ramananda Sakaprabhu brought up the other night, he said, in these cases of emergency and stress, people tend to come out of their houses and talk to each other when they normally don't. And during those times, it's nice if devotees are circulating and can give some shelter. Maru Mangal, who's one of the leaders there in the Tokyo Yatra, was saying today on the call that people are very much open to kirtan right now. He said they're doing. Was that an earthquake? They're doing. Let's turn to God. Because this place is going to go down like a Hari Bol. We could start it again, don't worry, wherever we go.
We might not die. All the hands look like
He said they're going around to yoga studios and people are very open to kirtan. They're chanting with their, with their whole heart open now. Because that, you look around and you see, look at that, the little island, and it's displaced by, 14 feet or something. It's like, it's like a bunch of ants just got sprayed and jostled and somebody fumigated them. And it's a really disturbing kind of thing when you think I'm on firm ground, everything's okay, and then it gets washed away in a second. So it does give rise to a pious soul's, clinging to the lotus feet of the Lord if he has such an inclination. Sri Krishna?
Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Like when tsunami came, like in a couple of years before in India, in South Indian Chennai part, a lot of Brahmanas also died. Like this is a lot of devotees also passed away. So this is because of Ugra Karma, Prabhu, or how can we understand that?
Like, everyone dies. And there's no guarantee how you're going to die in the world. I mean, sometimes people criticize devotees. They say, why did he die like that? It's like, you're going to die, and the body's just—it's one way or another. You could get washed away, but for devotees, thinking about Krishna when he dies, and he's done you know, his whole life is dedicated. So Krishna sorts everything out. It's, I mean, what's the ideal way to die, really? What is it?
Mantra 18 and 19.
Mantra 18 and 19. I mean, you might say, you know, it has to be, you know, surrounded by devotees chanting or something like that, but that's not always going to happen. It doesn't, when Krishna says, I protect my devotees, it doesn't, he doesn't say, you're not going to die. All kinds of things can happen.
One thing I think we brought up last week is that, like you said, everyone's going to die, but the fact is we don't know when we're going to die. And so when something natural disaster comes up like this, especially in such a rich country or whatever, you know, it just shows that anyone else around the world realizes that we can die at any moment. We have no idea when we can die, and therefore let me get serious now.
Yeah, and you know, Prabhupada said something that really stuck in my mind. He said, if you want to cheat death before death cheats you. And to do that, he said, you have to be dexterous. Can you look the word up? Dexterous, I think, has to do with the right hand, right? Dexter means the right hand, which means, you know, if you're right-handed anyway, that you can do all kinds of quick and adroit and clever things with your right hand. So dexterous means skillful, expert. So if you want to cheat death, you got to really think ahead, because death is tricky, like anything. You know, it can be the next phone call. It can be the next, you know, you stubbed your toe and you thought it was nothing, right? It could be a little, you know, a little pinprick. I know people that almost died. Our gardener almost died because he got pricked by a rose. And he thought, oh, I got pricked by a rose. And 2 days later, there was a big line up his arm. And then 2 days after that, he was on antibiotics, almost dying from a rose prick. Death is very tricky. It can come in from any direction. What does dexterous mean?
It means adroit or skillful in the use of the hands, body, or mind.
So be skillful to cheat death. Maharaj Katvanga, he worked for the demigods. He was a very skillful person, and he was employed by the demigods fighting on their side for many, many thousands of years. And then they offered him a benediction, and he said, just tell me one thing, when am I going to die? And they said, about 1 minute. And he's famous because in that 1 minute, he just totally absorbed himself in devotional service and was able to have success. Point is, it can come in any time, and we have to be ready, be dexterous. It's better to really plan ahead and be ready, cut off all the gaps that are keeping you further away from devotional service. It's not that you can do it artificially, but anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. The Shastra says this is the way of surrender. In your life, you have a period of time. This is time management. Spiritual time management. Time management is based on the principle that there's a finite amount of time. If you think you have an infinite amount of time, there's no time management. It only comes in when you set the clock and you say, I got 1 hour to clean the whole house. Now get busy. What am I going to do first? So if you understand that there's a finite amount of time and you have to organize your life so that you have to do it, then here's the instruction. Anukulyasya sankalpa. What's your sankalpa? It must be that I'll accept the things that are favorable for my devotional service. Anukulyasya. Things that are favorable for Krishna, to Krishna. Ani pratikulyasya. That means the opposite. Things that aren't favorable for pleasing Krishna, for attracting Krishna. Is that attractive to Krishna? Is eating garlic attractive to Krishna? You can't offer it. You know why? Because if you offer garlic to Krishna, then what's his breath going to smell like? And he has associates and gopis and, you know. So it's not favorable. Do you find the things that are favorable and you bring those in more? And the things that are unfavorable, you expunge them from the system and you close the gaps more and more and more. This is what it means to be adroit. You have to figure it out. And a person who's fully compact in devotional service does it by closing those gaps one at a time. Wherever you see it, wherever you can, close it up, and then you get in a tight ball of protection of devotional service. Krishna's protecting such a person. That's a real adroitness. So we heard from Mantra 6 today. We solved all the problems of life. And one of the aspects is anupashyati, which means something that everyone can do, and that's to follow. We used to play it when I was in grammar school, follow the leader. You just go out on the playground, and there'd be a leader, and he'd do all kinds of crazy stuff, and all the kids would walk behind him and just do the same thing and see what he's doing, and then you do it too. So here we're finding out, how do you become an elevated soul? Anupashyati. You find out what the elevated souls have done. You watch them, and then you follow them. And you also follow the scripture, because it's all written down there. It's all in codes, so you know exactly what to do. So do that. Follow that. Anupashyati. And that way, systematically, you come to the position of perfection in life. And we also heard that anybody can do it. It's not based on your birth. It's not based on your present material qualification. It's based on the mercy of Krishna. We heard Prabhu Vishnave Namaha, because Krishna is so powerful that he himself or one of his devotees, through which he sends his potency, can bring you to the highest position. So you just have to take that. Did we hear anything else? Ramesh?
Hare Krishna. Yeah, you talked about bhukti, mukti, and kami, and things like that. So is it kind of applicable even in present days where everyone will desire to have more money and all that? As you mentioned, money is honey. So is it wrong to kind of expect for more money in order to be in devotional service or in order to perform more charity and things like that?
So, no, that's not wrong. You can have a desire to earn more money if it's connected to Krishna. Nothing wrong with that. Everything you can use at Krishna's service. So as an example, a simple example, when Srila Prabhupada first started the Krishna Consciousness Movement in New York City, several people came to join him, to help him out. And they saw, well, here's a sannyasi, and they had read all about renouncing the world, of course, from their standard books on gyan and moksha. And they said, well, we'll renounce the world too, and we'll also just become a renunciate, which is easy for hippies to do. But in any case, but Prabhupada, not all of them were hippies, but Prabhupada said, no, I want you to go and get a job. And they were shocked. Go get a job? I thought we were going to renounce the world here. He said, go get a job and give the money to Krishna. So some people, like our, one of the great heroes of the Krishna Conscious Movement, Jayananda Prabhu, he started by driving a cab. He drove a cab all day here in San Francisco, cab driver. And while he was driving, he gave the money to the temple. Were you a householder when you were when you joined? Did you have some work?
Well, actually, I was a brahmachari.
You were brahmachari? For a year. But when you were a grihastha in Japan, did you have a job where you were giving money in the temple, or did you just move in full time?
I just moved in full time, but when I did go to San Francisco, a Jayananda Prabhu was still driving a cab and supporting the temple. And for a while, because the Sankirtan really hadn't begun that much, actually, a group of us, about 10 brahmacharis, we went and worked at a factory assembling neon lights. And we gave all our money to the temple, and that way we supported the temple.
And also, the devotees in Los Angeles started a company called Spiritual Sky. It was an incense company. And lots of devotees worked in that Spiritual Sky incense company for many years, and opened accounts and things like that. Prabhupada gives the example over and over again of Maharaj Ambarish. And Maharaj Ambarish was a great king with lots of wealth, but he engaged it all in Krishna service. And he's considered a pinnacle of pure devotional service. And then we have our very own Ambarish Prabhu, who is a member of ISKCON, who is the great-grandson of Henry Ford. And he has lots of money because, you know, it's the Ford family. Even when all the other automobile companies were going down, they had so much cash. They were like, they told the government, we don't need your help. They're doing okay. He's using that money right now. In fact, I'm just going to send you the pictures. Did you all see the pictures of the Food for Life? Yeah. We sent out the going on in ISKCON in India. Now, next, I'm sending you a picture. Send to Damodar. I have some really nice pictures I'm supposed to be getting today or tomorrow of the new temple that's being built in Mayapur that Prabhupada asked for. He wanted this enormous temple right in Mayapur that would show Vedic astronomy and things like that. And who paid for the whole thing? Ambarish Ford. It's his money. I think he put in $50 million or something like that. We'll always be raising more. Then there's the maintenance. That's going to be...
Prabhu, why I asked this question is, last Wednesday you happened to mention that if we had $150,000 cash...
You have so $100,000...
No, you said that we could move to a new temple and things like that. So at that time I was thinking about divine interference so that... If I can get enough money so that I can be of some service to this. So then when I heard your this one discourse today, so I was a little guilty. So
you forget what I said today. Yeah, no, that's pure-hearted. That is pure-hearted to think like that. You know, Prabhupada always thought like that too. He wanted oceans of money. And Prabhupada used to say about how the Mayavadi sannyasis, sometimes you go to give them money and they would go, you know, no, no. He said, we go like this because we take. And we just engage it in Krishna service. Brahmins are meant to take charity, all kinds of charity, but they don't keep it. They only keep what they need to keep the body and soul together. That's a real Brahmin. They don't need extravagance. They don't hoard it either. Because they depend on Krishna. They take in money like anything, and they spend it all the time. They're always broke. No matter how much money they get, they're always broke because they spend it, and they spend it. And so, yes, if you're thinking, you know, let me get more money to build Krishna a temple, that's how to engage it. That's what we call yukta vairagya. That's a vairagya that's connected to Krishna. Your desire is, I want to see Krishna in a beautiful altar, and we want marble on the floor. We want just to walk in and have that feeling that this is Vaikuntha. It's pristine. Everything's for the Lord. And if you're desiring to have that, that's a spiritual desire. It's not material. It's not when it becomes material. It means you're doing for yourself. Okay.
Prabhu, this Anupashyati, what you are telling, so is that Yadyadacharati Sreshta Tatta Devetarojanai, does it connect with that kind of thing?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Where we follow whoever.
Yes, definitely. That's the law of the world, that we follow the those who are great in some way, and generally common people follow them. It's a natural thing. So we have to hook ourselves on to the great souls, to the Mahatma, and that's the secret in life. That's what's said throughout all the Shastra. That's the easy way to advance in devotional service. And according to Mahaprabhu, that's the only way to advance in devotional service.
You had mentioned about...
Can you move up just a little bit?
Ambarish Prabhu, and I was to say that I read about that from an article that what's the other Prabhu's name who is into fundraising? Kalakanta?
Kalakanta, yeah.
Kalakanta. he wrote an article just recently on dandavats.com where he referred to this Mayapur temple, mentioned that Ambarish Prabhu has started it, but that we have a long way to go because we have lots of money to raise. And he there says, in fact, raises quite a few questions. What should the strategy be for capturing these big funds? It was a very inspiring type of an article. And I thought it might be useful for us also to look at some of the ideas that are suggested in there.
Yeah, fundraisers always talk like that too. Do you have enough? No, no, we're broke. You know? Sure, we're fine, no problem. Okay. So anyway, we heard something. We heard from Shrish Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and all these things will teach us the exact way to go back home, back to Godhead, and take shelter because the world's a shifting and uncertain place, but this is certain. And Krishna's promise in the Bhagavad Gita is certain that those who take shelter of him, he'll give complete protection and intelligence. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shish Upanishad ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gop Prem Anande Haribo.